accession number 10600, reel 3.
Mr. John Wainwright, reel 3. Did you have any special training of any kind while you were with the Territorials? Were you in the signal section or anything like that?
Oh, yes, I joined the signal section sometime after I'd finished my recruit training. And it was mainly semaphore in the first instance. Anyway, we had the semaphore flags there. So we were able to do the training in the drill hall when that was available for us. But apart from that, we were allowed to go out into Hay Park, which was the seat of Lord Crawford. And we used to go out there to do a lot of our signalling training. But it was, as I say, mainly semaphore. Later on, during the war, we got onto the Morse code.
Did you establish a very strong feeling of unit identity with the 5th Battalion Manchester, or was it with your company, or were you very proud of your battalion and your company and such like?
Oh yes, I'm certain that the Wigan Battalion, the Battalion of the 5th Manchester, I always thought about the 5th Manchester when you were talking about it, about your training and so forth. You always referred to the 5th Manchester, not your signalling section or company. It was the 5th Manchester. That was the focal point, I think. Loyalty was to the battalion.
What about to the regiment? Had you been taught about the history of the Manchesters?
Well, we knew something about the history of the Manchester Regiment, because the Manchester Regiment, I mean, was famous really from the Ladysmith days, the Siege of Ladysmith. General Ian Hamilton mentioned that, I think, in his foreword to the history of the 42nd Division, that he's very keen on the Manchester Regiment, and it was, and we were proud of it.
Was it which was the real centre of your loyalties, though, the battalion, the Wigan Battalion, or to the Manchester Regiment, or was it just both intermixed?
Well, we were proud to belong to the East Lancashire Division too, so, I mean, although we were proud of the Regiment, we thought we were a part of the East Lancashire Division, Territorial Army. And we were proud of both of them.
What were you doing at the actual time of the outbreak of war? Do you remember the lead-up to the war?
I remember it quite well, because I told you I was in the Scout Movement. And we went for our annual training a few days before the outbreak of war. I think it must have been on the Friday before the outbreak of war. Our scout troop, we had gone to North Wales, to Llandilles, that's in between Rhyl and Colwyn Bay. And we went by train to North Wales, and we noticed when we were on the platform, and I think we had to change at Chester, by the way, and there seemed to be a lot of soldiers about, a lot of people evidently have been called up, reservists have been called about, seemed to be a tremendous amount of movement of people. So we had this feeling that something was happening, something was going on. We didn't actually know war hadn't been declared then. But anyway, we got to South Wales and set up camp there, and it was whilst there that we got notice of the outbreak of war on the 4th of August, and the notices were, everybody seemed to know, but it was in the paper. We got the notice somehow that all soldiers and territories must immediately return to their base. So the other assistant scoutmaster I mentioned, Walter Naylor, his name was, by the way, he was going back, and he had to go back to join his yeomanry regiment, and I had to get back to Wigan to the drill hall. So we travelled together. And incidentally, that was the last time I ever saw him. I never saw him again. He was killed in France quite late on in the war. Anyway, that was the position at that time.
How did you feel about the outbreak of war? Did you have any conception of what it was going to be like, or that it would involve you and that you'd actually be in it as opposed to just home service?
Well, it was a feeling of sort of excitement or subdued excitement. This was it. Something was going to happen. But for some reason or other, I don't know why, everybody thought the war now that it had started, wouldn't last very long. I mean, the usual feeling, well, it'll be over by Christmas.
Did you share that feeling, or did you understand what it was about?
I don't think we shared that feeling. We couldn't imagine that with the build-up, as we knew, of the German army, the huge army that they got in the Navy, that it could possibly be over in a few weeks. We didn't think it would go on for years, I don't think.
So you think it was the civilians who thought it would be over by Christmas, not the actual serving territorials and regulars?
Yes, I think it was generally the people who didn't know much about military matters at all got the idea that we always won, the British always won, and we'd polish these people off, you know. Where they got the idea from, I don't know.
Did you have any idea what type of fighting and war it would be? Before, I mean, this, you know, on August 4th, around about that time.
No, except from our training as territorials, there wasn't any idea of trench warfare. And I think it was the same with our generals and officers and whatnot. I mean, everybody seemed to think it would be something like the South African War, all skirmishing and so forth, no trench warfare at all. And we seemed to be trained on that basis for quite a long time.
What did your family and friends think now you were actually called up? How did they react?
Well, they didn't have much chance of getting in touch with Arthur because we had to report in Wigan, and in a few days we were off to Littleborough in East Lancashire, miles away from home.
So you didn't have much contact?
We didn't have much contact with.
Well, let's take up the story then from when you got to Wigan. You travelled there with your friend. What happened when you got there?
Well, I tell you how we travelled as a signalling section. Soon after we arrived in Wigan, after the call-up, we were told to go to a local shop in Wigan, and we picked up, this is the signalling section, I mean, and we picked up rally cycle. We're all fitted out with a rally bike, rally cycle. So when the orders came for the battalion to move to Littleborough, the main battalion, where they went by train, but we went off on our bikes, carrying our kit and rifles and signalling flags and what have you on the bike. It was rather a job. It's quite a long way from Wigan to Littleborough, to go to Wigan and then on to Bolton, Bury, Haywood, Rochdale, Littleborough. So we went on our bikes there, and then when we got there, we found the camp was set up. I think all the tents have been erected, and we were allotted to our own tents, and that was it.
What date was that we went to Littleborough?
I don't know the exact date. I should think it was about a week after the outbreak of war. It would be around about the 12th, I should think.
What had you been doing in between the time when you got back to Wigan and went to Littleborough? Where had you been staying?
Well, part of the people were staying in the drill hall. And our company, the A company that I was in, we were staying at a local school near the Wigan football ground, St John's, and we were just sleeping on the floors anyway, there, sleeping as best we could. I don't remember ever having any blankets or anything issued at all. Remember, we just had to, and we were getting some meals. I think the local cooperative society were supplying meals. We had meals from there, from some sort of central kitchen that they had.
Was it a chaotic situation at all? Or was it under control?
Well, I think it was under control. I mean, I don't think there was anything chaotic about it. We knew that we got to move somewhere, and it was just a case of waiting until the arrangements could be made about the transport and so forth.
What was the camp like at Littleborough?
Well, it was like any other army camp. I mean, it must have been a divisional camp. There were hundreds and hundreds of tents. I mean, all in order according to the various battalions. and we just settled in.
How many to a tent? What was it like in the tent, if you could tell me?
Just about enough to for all to be sleep around the tent there. I said 10 or 12, I think.
And what would you do with your kit and equipment in the tent?
Well, all the kit that you got a kit bag, you know, and all your belongings were in the kit bag. So, and we had a palliass, as I mentioned before, when we were camping. So we had a palliass, and this was just rolled up when you weren't sleeping at the back of the tent, and there was just room to go in, and that was it.
You slept with your feet towards the pole, didn't you?
Well, I slept with our feet towards the pole, and our heads out there, like the outside.
Did you find it, were you embarrassed at all by the lack of privacy or anything like that, or were you just used to it by then?
Well, we just took it in our stride, and that was it.
What activities were going on at Littleborough? What were they doing?
Well, I think we were sort of awaiting orders mainly, and there was a certain amount of parading and drilling, but it had to be very limited, because there was a whole division there in there, and we're pretty well crowded out in this area there. I remember we went on route marches, and I remember we went on once or twice on a swimming parade. We went down to a lake, Hollingworth Lake, nearby, and swimming. So I think we were passing time, waiting for arrangements to be made as to where the next move was.
Did you get into Littleborough itself at all, or were you allowed out for recreation?
Oh, yes, we were allowed out in the evenings there, and I made some friends near to the camp, from the camp, leading up into the centre of the town. There was a little cottage, and the old mill cottage in Ely's. That was the name of the sort of road, a roadway out of the camp. And I don't quite know how it happened, but several of us were invited to go there. And if we wished to write letters home, we could go and use their front room, the parlour, to write our letters and that sort of thing. So then we used to just go and go have a walk into the town and so forth.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you started to drink about this time, or that you'd have an occasional drink.
No,
what was the story?
No, I didn't start to drink. I had a drink because on that bike ride, which was in August, it was a very hot summer, by the way, and it was the hardest bike ride that I've ever had there. And that day there, been loading with full kit on the bikes. And I remember part way there, somewhere on the way there, we stopped, and it was near a pub, and we just went into this pub. And in those days, the pubs were open all the hours of the day, you know. And I remember just having this drink. It was all the same to me, whether it was water or pop or beer or whatever. I presume it was a pint of beer, and it just went down. And that was it. So that was the first drink I ever had in my life.
But you didn't make a habit of it?
Oh, no, I never went wandering around the pubs there. I can't remember going into any pubs in Littleborough or anything at all. Rather contrary, I remember going with went with the family from this cottage. We went to their chapel, I remember, once or twice on the Sunday and so forth. So we just... We were just waiting to see what would happen.
Now, something did happen after a while, and first, you apparently had to volunteer for active service. How was that done? Abroad?
Oh, yes, actually, the Territorial Army had been formed originally. Well, it was formed, for home service. And shortly after mobilisation, and we were given the opportunity we're asked if anybody would like to volunteer for overseas service. And actually, as far as our battalion was concerned, and I think it was the same with all the division, more or less volunteered en masse. There were very few of our division who didn't volunteer. We got a £5 bounty, by the way, if we volunteered, but I don't think it was the £5 that made us volunteer.
Was it done at any special parade or ceremony, or did they just ask you privately?
Well, it was just sort of issued out with the normal orders, sort of thing.
How long were you at Littleborough then?
Well, we left on the 9th or 10th of September. It would be the 9th because we travelled by train from Littleborough right down to Southampton. And that was a long journey, especially in those days. And it was next day on the 10th that we embarked on the Caledonia. I remember we stopped, but the first stop I can remember was at Bristol, and that was a long way from Littleborough. I remember we all got out and stretching our legs, and I remember I remember a lady on the platform coming up to me and gave me a little pocket Bible, New Testament, which I carried with me right through the war. I've still got it, as a matter of fact.
What happened when you embarked then on the 10th?
I embarked on the 10th at Southampton, yes. And we had a pretty terrible journey for the first few days.
That was on the Caledonia?
We went on the Caledonia, yes.
What was your accommodation like in there?
I thought it was terrible, actually. We were in hammocks down in the depths of the ship. I don't know what you would call it. We're down below somewhere, and there were hammocks slung up under the ceiling, and there were mess tables, a lot of rows of mess tables underneath, and that's where we were supposed to be living. We had to climb up onto the table and then wriggle ourselves onto the hammocks. But quite a few of us, I mean, after one or two nights, that we had quite enough. And some of us used to go out. I remember sleeping under one of the lifeboats on the top deck one time. I thought it was more comfortable than in a hammock.
Didn't you like the hammock?
I didn't like the hammocks, and it seemed to be all hot and stuffy.
Was it overcrowded at all?
Well, it seemed to be. Well, there were a lot of us there. I mean, I think there were, whether there were two battalions or not, with a lot of people. It seemed to be troops all over the place.
What was the food like on board?
Terrible. The worst food I've ever had, at least in retrospect. I remember having some terrible, horrible stew first thing in the morning for breakfast, which didn't go down very well, especially when we were going through the Bay of Biscay and the boat had started rocking. And I was really ill. I've never been so ill in my life.
You were seasick then?
I was seasick for two or three days. Absolutely terrible. And then to see these Dixies full of stew coming up there, it just made me worse. I thought the food was awful.
What was actually wrong with it? Was it just unappetizing?
Well, it was the wrong sort of food. I mean, we never expected having stews and that sort of thing in the morning, you know. Fatty stew, I don't know. And there was nothing special about the meal. And I can't remember anything besides bread and jam and that sort of thing for tea. And then this main meal. No, I thought the food was pretty bad anyway.
What would you do in a typical day then, not during the voyage?
Well, after a few days, I was given the job of, or two of us, were given the job going on the deck, just below the captain's bridge, you know, because the Caledonia was like the flagship for the convoy. I should think there were about 20 vessels in our convoy. And the Caledonia was, I think, the largest vessel. It seemed to be about the largest vessel. And the captain was sort of in charge of what I termed the flagship of the convoy. And we used to go up there to help there with, we could give sending messages out we had two destroyers or two cruisers or something, two smaller warships who were guarding us, you know. And we used to keep in touch with them from the captain, just below the captain's bridge.
And how long would you be on that duty for?
I think more or less all the voyage through. I remember going right through the Mediterranean.
What else? Do you remember anything else about the voyage?
I remember stopping once. Somebody must have died. We got a message through. Somebody had died on one of the ships. And the convoy stopped, and I remember seeing in the distance, I got a pair of glasses, I remember seeing this body going over, wrapped up there over there. later on, that was in the Mediterranean, in the western side of the Mediterranean. A few days afterwards, there was a sight I shall never forget, really, because coming in the opposite direction, we see them coming in the morning at break of day, and there was another convoy. Later on we learned was from troops from India, a regular army from India, and Indian troops, who were coming in the opposite direction. They were going home to join the home army and then probably to go on to France. There must have been 30 or 40 vessels coming towards us, and there was well over 20 or 24 to so on our side. We all met there in the Mediterranean. It was a wonderful sight.
Were you able to communicate with them at all? Were they close enough to shout?
No, I don't know. There was nothing. You could just see them, you know. Somebody did try to shout at them, but they were too far off, really.
And then what happened?
Well, before that, after the Bay of Biscay, we called in at Gibraltar, but we never went ashore. We just stayed there for a part of a day, I think, and then went on right into the Mediterranean. And after this convoy, the next thing was we put in at Malta, Valletta Harbour, for a time there, but we didn't go ashore. And the thing that I remember mostly about that Valletta Harbour was we're in the harbour there, and it was a very sheltered harbour, not quite still. You could see the water very, very clear indeed. And there were lots of Maltese boys. Apparently they used to meet ships of all sorts that came there, encouraging people to throw coins over. And they would dive down in the water and pick these coins up. But they were very particular. They didn't want copper coins. They wanted some silver or something. And somehow I chose to throw pennies over, but if they saw a penny, no, they wouldn't go down. It had to be threatened a bit, or sixpence or so forth. I remember that quite well. And then the next thing is we went off to on a day tour at Alexandria.
So what day did you arrive at the Alexandria around about on the
24th. And I remember one of the jobs that I got on embarkation, presumably somebody else from my company or signalers as well, but we had the job of taking some of the horses after they'd been disembarked down along the landing stage or docks or whatever it was, to some sort of place where they were taken to be collected anyway, so a sort of a collection point. Remember, that was one of the jobs that I had there. And then after we disembarked and got all the...
What were your first impressions of Alexandria? It's first time abroad, obviously. A first strange town like that. What did you think?
No tremendous great impressions, except that it was very, very hot. It was a very brilliant sort of day, and it was quite hot. And I remember there were some fruit there, somebody... There were some fruit stall there, selling. They were selling. Stop for a moment, please. Yes, they were stalled there, and on the stall there were melons, and they looked absolutely luscious there. And I remember someone was buying some of these melons. But I also remember that one of the officers came along and said, "And tried to stop us, or did stop us from." Having any more, but we'd already had our fill, though, because there was always a danger of some food poisoning or something or other. Anyway, he stopped us from buying any more. And then, anyway, when we'd disembarked and all the helped with the luggage and so forth, we marched off in turn and went off into barracks. And
do you remember the name of the barracks?
Yes, it was Mustafa Pasha Barracks.
Well, could you describe the accommodation you got in there?
Well, the barracks was part of the army of occupation in Egypt, and we'd relieved a regular battalion there who were there, and we'd just taken the barracks over. It was just a normal brick sort of building, you know, with various places and different sections, where we were, in a way you could compare the sleeping quarters, or the room, something like a hospital ward, or beds on both sides of the place, just like a big army hut with beds on both sides. We all had our truckle beds and we had our kit there, and that was it.
Where did you keep your kit? Did you have a cupboard or anything?
Well, the main thing is we had a kit bag, you know. There might have been something, but I don't. I can't sort of remember having a cupboard or anything there.
Were you responsible for keeping your barrack room clean, interior?
Oh, yes. I mean, they were very keen. That's one of the things about the army. I mean, the main things in the morning, you had to, when you got up after reveille, one of the things was after the first early parade, you had to get back and get in bed and blankets all wrapped up in a proper order, you know, and then our kit put away, nothing lying about. The rooms had to be cleaned and swilled and all the rest of it. They're very, very particular on that. The end of the week, there was always an inspection and a kit inspection. The barrack room had to be absolutely clean as a new pin, as they say. And your kit had to be laid out in a certain order. Everything that you got laid out on the bed.
Do you remember the order? You probably won't.
Oh, I don't remember the order now, but I mean, you had all the knife, fork and spoon and hussif and all, but everything you had, and spare pair of socks, and everything had to be in this particular order there. And then later on, the OC would come round and everybody would stand by the beds. And if there's anything wrong, well, they were up for it. They were very, very keen. They were very keen on those inspections and the cleanliness of the place.
That's the start of the day in Mustafa Pasha barracks. You mentioned, you know, you got up and... could you continue through a typical day while you were in training there?
Well, the first thing was to get up, and then we used to go on what was called a running parade.
What was that?
Well, it was just like a jog in companies. I mean, the company commander or platoon commander would take his platoon or company or whatever it was, and he'd just go for a little jog around the barracks there for half an hour. And then after that, we used to get our morning cup of tea from the cookhouse.
Did you get anything else
then
breakfast?
Then later on, we went back and had a wash and shave and so forth, and then it was breakfast time.
What would that be?
Well, that would probably getting 8 or 8:30 or something like that, because we were up at 6 o'clock in the morning. By the time we got up and had this running parade back, and then came back and washed and shaved and so forth, and got everything smart and tidy and dressed properly, I was probably about 8 or 8:30, I should think. And then we used to parade, very often used to parade. Very keen on the parade. You used to parade first of all by your own platoons, and then companies, so the platoon officer would see that his section was absolutely right and everybody tidy and in good order. Then you move up onto the company, and then you'd have the company inspecting. Then you move up onto the battalion. Then it all depends on what was happening. There might be a battalion exercise, or my companies might be on various exercises.
What sort of exercises would you go on?
Well, when I say the exercises, it all depends on what you were doing. I told you before, there was no trench digging like this or anything. There were sort of movements, you know, in open order and so forth, and little exercises and sort of little military exercises and so forth, that's all.
So after you'd done that was the morning session.
Well, then there might have been some battalion exercise, you see. Or it might be a company exercise. You move on from your sections to battalion, then company.
Would that be in the morning, or would it be over the day?
Well, sometimes you went on, you went out in the desert, sometimes you'd be out for the day, sometimes. Occasionally we used to go out at night and bivouac at night on the desert. So you go out at night time and have this training and exercise and open airs, getting down and firing from the open and getting up advancing and so forth. And these occasions we stayed on there and bivouacked there. We had our own ground sheets and made a sort of a shelter with the ground sheet and stayed on there for the night.